Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, reports this weekend suggest that a fourth COVID-19 vaccine dose is likely to be offered to as many as 4 million people at the same time as the winter flu vaccination. While opinions differ as to the peak of the Omicron wave and whether we've passed it here. For more on all of this, I'm joined now by Dr. David Nabarro, the World Health Organization's Special Envoy on COVID-19. Dr. Nabarro, thank you for joining us once again.
Very good morning to you and to listeners. Thank you.
What's your assessment, David, of the Omicron wave and where it might be at?
So, thank you. The waves that we see are a result of a virus that is affecting people and at the same time, people with varying degrees of resistance to the virus. After you've had COVID or after you've been vaccinated, there is a waning of the protection, or what we call immunity, to subsequent infections. And by waning, what I mean is, after some months, your body's immunity diminishes and you are susceptible again. So what tends to happen is that we get these waves of disease about every 3 to 4 months, and they reflect both those seriousness of the virus and the degree to which immunity is reduced. So right now, it is my belief that in Western Europe, the current Omicron surges are picking up again, partly because of a slight change in the character of the virus and the waning immunity. And I suspect it'll go on for a little bit more time before it reaches its next peak and then comes down again.
Because we are told here by some of our politicians, Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, that we're close or even past the second Omicron wave here in Ireland. Stephen Donnelly is our health minister. He said, he was quoted in the papers yesterday as saying Ireland could be past the peak of the current BA2 wave. Mm. What do you see in the Irish situation?
So the first thing is that we look at the numbers of people with reported infections. But the difficulty is that testing has changed in many countries recently. So the case numbers themselves may be deceptive. Secondly, we look at what's happening in hospitals. And thirdly, we look at figures for people being severely ill or dying. And the current situation, as I understand it, in Ireland, is that the numbers are high, but the thing that I particularly pick up is that the percentage of tests that were positive in Ireland in the week up to last Friday, the figure I have is 38%. Now, that suggests that probably this surging that we've got at the moment is a bit more serious than what we're picking up in the numbers of cases. Because with 38% positive rate, it probably means that if you tested more widely, you'd pick up an awful lot more cases. I suspect that we can't really say that the problem has been peaked or has peaked or is past. I'd say we're just pretty much in the midst of it.
Yeah, you just said a little earlier about this wave that comes, David, every 3 to 4 months. Is there a reason for that timeline?
Well, thank you. It's because of the rate at which immunity declines after people have been infected or vaccinated. Some people, and we can't really tell which of them, seem to have decreased protection quite quickly. Their immunity wanes fast, particularly older people. That's why we get some people in any community who tell us that they've got COVID for the second time in 6 or 7 or 8 months. They're the people whose immunity has dropped quickly. And it just seems that right now, partly because the variant BA2 has the capacity to get around our vaccine defences quite well, but partly also because you've got a lot of older people who've had several months since their last vaccination, there seems to be quite a susceptibility in European populations, which is why we are going into another wave. It's that balance between how susceptible are we and how nasty is the virus.
So when it comes to Omicron and reinfection, and we hear anecdotally about people being reinfected, don't we? But say somebody who had the first Omicron variant in January, how likely are they now to be infected by BA2?
Well, they are in places where BA2 is becoming more widespread. Folk who had Omicron in January are getting infected. I can't give you the probability that they'll get reinfected, and I can't actually, I'm afraid, tell you how serious their reinfections are, because this is all stuff that's being collected right now. But what I will tell you is that there is an interesting increase in the numbers of people who are being reinfected right now, right across Western Europe. So what it means is that we need to do everything possible to keep our vaccinations up to date. And I do encourage everybody, if they can, to continue being careful to avoid infection by wearing face masks and maintaining physical distancing. There's still an awful lot of this virus around.
We seem to have a problem here with the uptake of the booster shot. We've 700,000 people in Ireland who haven't had their booster.
I wondered what's this?
For some people, I'd say, I'm just guessing now, that if you've had COVID recently in the last few months, you might just say to yourself, well, I have the added immunity that the booster would have given me.
Yeah, and you see that, everybody, that's what I think we're learning that I need to share with you. If you've had COVID, it only gives you a measure of protection against getting it again. And the longer the time since you had your COVID, the less strong your defenses are. So I am going to say, if you've been offered a booster, please take it, unless there's a really, really good reason not to, because being protected is what can save our lives, us oldies. In the 70s, like me, get your booster.
I want to ask you about masks. I always ask you about masks, but it's been very controversial.
Our favorite subject.
It's been so controversial here in the last couple of weeks. So our CMO, our outgoing CMO, has recommended to the government that there be no change to mandatory mask wearing in certain settings. But the health workers are putting on really big pressure now, because they say that they're under huge pressure in hospitals in particular because of this current wave. So where do you stand on whether mask wearing should be made mandatory?
Well, I have to say, Claire, whenever somebody says mandatory, whether it's mask wearing or vaccination or other such things, I say, can we do everything possible to get the same result without coercion? And that's because as soon as you make something mandatory, there will be a community who just find it unacceptable. And we've got to be clear about this. I mean, I'm not going to say whether it's right or wrong that there is this anger about public health mandates, but it is there. And so I am going to say everything should be done to make it voluntary, so that it is people doing the right thing at the right place in the right time because they want to, rather than because they're instructed to. Now, that said, I do appreciate that in certain professions, it's really important that if people can be vaccinated, they are. And that does apply within the health and caring professions. So I'd like to say we need a really strong encouragement and if necessary, support for those who are in the caring profession so they get themselves vaccinated and boosted. But I'm kind of continuing to hold out against mandatory use of mandatory powers if we can.
I mean, and I can understand your logic. However, if I am vulnerable for whatever reason and I want to use the bus to get to work, but only 60% of people on that bus are wearing masks, that means I can't use the bus. So I am prevented from travelling to work in the way that I wish to.
Yeah. And Claire, I think that settings like public transport or particular employment situations like the reception area of a busy office block, I think that the owners of or the responsible people in these settings should, if they perceive it's necessary, actually impose rules for what happens to people in those settings, because I believe that individuals do have a choice to not go into those settings if they truly don't like it. But the owners of the place have a responsibility to their employees. So I'm okay about it being a rule that in public transport people should wear masks, or that in reception areas people should wear masks, because that's done to protect the well-being, firstly, of people who are immunosuppressed who come into those settings, and secondly, the people who have to work there and constantly be in contact with others, like those who drive buses or those who man reception desks. So yes, in those settings, the premise owners should be, I believe, within their responsibility to be able to set the rules.
Okay, I just wonder with the changes to the testing regime, and it's not just happening here, it's happening all over the place, how you feel about that? Because I just have a message here from a listener who says they were at a wedding last week, 15 people were infected, but only one of them isolated and uploaded the details to the website. This person says the figures are only a fraction of what's actually out there. And I think we know that the reported figures are only a fraction of what's out there. But it is concerning if people aren't adhering to the isolation rules, isn't it? And that's possibly related to the fact that the testing, official PCR testing, isn't happening on near the scale that it was.
Well, it's all because the public don't fully understand what's expected and then get confused about what to do. And that lack of understanding about what's expected is because the messages coming through from leaders in some European countries are super mixed up. My ruling is this: this virus moves around in ways that can only be understood if we've got widespread testing in place, where people test and their results are uploaded so that authorities know what's going on. And if you drop free testing, and if you dismantle the system for collecting the results, then nobody is going to know where the virus is, and it becomes almost impossible to do sensible things in our own lives. It's like fighting blindfold. And so I am saying, is it really that expensive to maintain free testing in countries that are saying it's too expensive to do so? Isn't it worthwhile to keep it going, because the costs of missing a surge and then ending up with lots of disease all over again could be so much greater? So I'd like free testing to be continued, and I'd like the systems for collecting the data to be kept strong, because we need to know where this virus is.
Yeah, the free testing doesn't happen here anymore. I think you have to be under the age of 3 and over the age of 55 before you should go for a PCR test. Otherwise, it's an antigen test, and then it's left up to people whether they want to register that positive result if they get one.
Well, I don't know the reasons for individual countries making these decisions, but in general, I am finding the lack of clarity on testing to be very disturbing right now. We just don't know what's going on.
What's the World Health Organization view on the isolation period? In Ireland, it's being reviewed. The CMO is looking at the 7 days because he's been asked by the government to do so. In the United Kingdom and the United States, it's down to 5 days. Does the World Health Organization have a position on that?
The WHO view is to say the duration of isolation has a direct impact on your ability to get this disease under control. The longer the isolation, the lower the risk that people are still excreting the virus in their saliva or cough. And so the WHO position has always been, if you want minimum risk, you have a long isolation. If you shorten the isolation period, you are definitely upping the risk. So you need at all times to be making what we call a trade-off between long isolation and people out of work and out of circulation for longer and less disease, or shorter isolation, perhaps more disease, but people in employment for more time, and therefore it's better for the economy. All these choices need to be made very publicly and, if necessary, debated among the representatives so that we get a balanced outcome.
David, in our papers here in the Sunday Independent, it was reported yesterday that a fourth vaccine dose is likely to be offered to everybody, to 4 million people, at the same time as the winter flu vaccination starting in October. Do we need a fourth vaccine for everybody?
In the past, I was quite nervous about European nations going towards a fourth dose, i.e. a second booster. I was saying, if you go and give too much in the way of boosters in the high-income countries, that's diminishing the vaccine available for the low-income countries. In recent months, there's been a much greater availability of vaccine globally. I can see an awful lot of sense in getting this second booster or the fourth dose available to people in Ireland, especially older people. And so it seems to me to be really sensible.
Okay, perhaps older people should be getting that fourth dose now.
Well, you did say all ages, and I wondered whether to comment on it. If I were going into this in greater detail, for example, we were talking about who comes first in the queue, I would say older people must be the first in the queue, and some of these will be hard to reach, but prioritise them, because as we've seen from the experience in other parts of the world, honestly, it really is older people who are at much greater risk of severe illness and death. So prioritise them, please.
Okay, I see last week that there was an updated COVID-19 strategic preparedness, readiness and response plan from your organisation, and these different scenarios were outlined. So we may see less serious variants emerge, but then the worst case scenario is another variant, another strain that is worse than what we're seeing now.
Yes, so how do I cope with this, Claire? Answer: I'm conscious that there may well be worse strains to come, but I'm not going to assume that that will blow our whole pandemic response efforts sideways. I actually think that by continuing to work in the way that you're doing in Ireland and that most other countries are doing around the world, that as humanity, we can get ahead of this virus. And even if unpleasant new strain emerges, we'll be able to pick it up and deal with it and stop it becoming dominant. I am also conscious that by working in this way, we will be much more effective at dealing with other pandemic causes as they appear, and in dealing with new kinds of crises and difficulties that are emerging, like, for example, the inflation in food and energy prices that are happening right now. We're learning to work better together. So although there are worries to come, although it's going to be a bumpy ride, I'm going to suggest to colleagues that we in WHO perceive that countries that continue to work together, approaching this with all the elements that you've got in the Irish response, you're going to get ahead of this best. And please explain what you're doing to other countries, because there are one or two that don't seem to be adopting the most effective strategies right now, and they need to be helped.
David, good to talk to you as always. Dr. David Nabarro there. Thank you, David. Coming up on the programme, we'll be discussing a major new report from the Intergovernmental Panel on what the world needs to do to mitigate climate change. That's coming up after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.